there are some patients who still report a lot of those cognitive issues, even if they're not having that many headache days. I've seen that clinically. It's also a little complicated. You know, if I'm seeing a patient with migraine, you know, we're assessing their cognition, but there's other factors as well. There's factors such as sleep. There's factors such as mood, right? And so it's not, usually I'm not just seeing a patient who has migraine and nothing else going on in their lives, right? They can have lost stressors going on. So it's really important to take into account all of those different factors as well, which can certainly all contribute to those cognitive symptoms day to day.
Dr. Laura Seabrow is a clinical neuropsychologist and researcher whose work is providing important new insights into how migraine affects the brain. Her studies have shown how migraine can influence attention, memory, and processing speed, not only during attacks, but over the long term. She's published widely, including recent findings in the journal Headache, and her research is helping clarify whether migraine contributes to cognitive decline or dementia risk, while also identifying strategies to better protect brain health. Dr. Seabrow, welcome to the Migraine World Summit.
Thank you so much for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about your research focus and how you became interested in the link between migraine and cognitive function?
Sure. So my research is focused on migraine and cognitive functioning. This all started when I started graduate school. I joined a headache research lab, Dr. Elizabeth Tsang's research lab. To be honest, when I first joined the lab, I didn't know much about migraine. I knew I wanted to specialize in neuropsychology, so I came in with that focus and, you know, started learning about migraine and cognition through the research that we were doing. As I went to conferences and dove deeper, I noticed how limited the research was, especially when it came to cognitive functioning and people with migraine. At the same time, I was hearing from both patients and research participants that they were experiencing cognitive symptoms and really wanted to understand them better. So that combination, you know, the gap in the literature and the clear need expressed by people living with migraine is really what motivated me to focus in this area.
Many people describe brain fog. What does that actually mean from a clinical and research perspective?
Yeah, so brain fog can be a little bit complicated to describe, and brain fog can be different from person to person. We often hear that term brain fog from a lot of patients. I'll say clinically, whenever I hear a patient talk about brain fog, I always ask them, what does brain fog mean to you? Because honestly, I'm a little confused myself. I think a lot of researchers are confused about it. I would say generally people understand it as problems with attention or being able to process things quickly. I would say a lot of people feel that way. But one person may feel like it affects their attention. Another person may say brain fog. They can't really think clearly. They can't really speak clearly. So it can really be different from person to person. So like I said before, when I have a patient explaining, I have brain fog, I always ask them, what does that mean to you? Because I need to know what that means, right? One person, the way one person experiences it can be so different than the way another person experiences it. So it's a complicated term. Some neuropsychologists will say, I'm not going to write that term in my overall impression section in a neuropsychological report, but I'm going to put that in quotations and then give a definition. And that's really the patient's definition.
So this topic was a popular topic that was voted on by the Migraine World Summit community, and we had people ask questions as part of their votes. And one of those people was Noor, who said that she's easily distracted and feels like her brain is just slow. Which cognitive skills, memory, attention, processing speed, executive function, are most commonly affected by migraine?
Yeah, so you know, many people experience those specific symptoms. That's very, very common. The cognitive symptoms like difficulty concentrating or just feeling very slow can be so bothersome and a disruptive part of their experience. Now, during migraine attacks, research has shown that objective testing reveals declines in several cognitive domains. The most consistent areas include attention and concentration, processing speed, working memory, executive functions. When I say executive functions, those are really the higher level thinking skills like planning and decision making and being able to, you know, rapidly shift from one thing to the next. So we have evidence to support difficulties in these areas during the attack.
It's a really bizarre phenomenon. Like when I have a migraine attack, I have migraine with aura. I just feel like parts of my brain are shutting down, and I kind of think that like the blood flow is just disappearing out of the space, and it's like turning off. It's like removing the power from, you know, the computer, so to speak.
Yeah, 100%. It's quite a unique experience for so many people. It's a very interesting description you've given. And I've heard that from other people as well, very similar kind of descriptions. You don't feel like yourself. You feel like you're completely turned off. And it can be so debilitating. It's so debilitating in how you function day to day and how you work, how you interact with people, you know, your work life, social life, if people are in school. And it really can completely change how a person even views themselves.
If we're stressed or if we are feeling emotional for whatever reason, can that affect our cognitive performance in that moment?
Oh, for sure. Yes. Yeah. If you're feeling stressed, feeling very overwhelmed, that's going to take up so much resource in your brain, right? You're not... I like to say, if you have this amount of attention and then all of a sudden you have stress, you're anxious, it's going to take that all up and you have this much left, right? You're not going to be able to pay attention to what that person is telling you. Your mind is in five different places.
Do these difficulties occur only during an attack, or are they also occurring between attacks for those with frequent or chronic migraine?
Yeah, it's important to recognize that many patients report cognitive symptoms even between attacks. We call that the interictal period. These symptoms may also include trouble with memory, language, and attention. That said, the evidence for more objective interictal cognitive difficulty is somewhat mixed. But we are still seeing in the research that there are changes in things like attention and executive functions. But overall, the cognitive symptoms of migraine, whether it's during the attack or in between the attacks, are real and impactful. And addressing these cognitive symptoms is an important part of the comprehensive migraine care.
As someone who's lived with chronic migraine, and fortunately, you know, I'm now sort of episodic, I would never get to 100% between attacks when I was chronic and frequent. But now I can. I can get back to 100%. Like, I feel like myself. I feel like my full cognition is here, to the best of my ability. Is that something that you've heard from other people who might have experienced chronic migraine and who are now episodic?
Unfortunately not. You know, some patients will say the same thing. You know, they, especially if they're not having as many headache days per month, they're starting to feel more clear and they're not having as many cognitive symptoms. But there are some patients who still report a lot of those cognitive issues, even if they're not having that many headache days. I've seen that clinically. It's also a little complicated. You know, if I'm seeing a patient with migraine, we're assessing their cognition, but there's other factors as well. There's factors such as sleep. There's factors such as mood, right? And so I'm not just seeing a patient who has migraine and nothing else going on in their lives, right? They can have a lot of stressors going on. So it's really important to take into account all of those different factors as well, which can certainly all contribute to those cognitive symptoms day to day.
You don't have to take it in all at once. You can return to extended interviews at your own pace with the All Access Pass. Your recent paper in Headache examined the cognitive impacts of migraine during and between attacks. What were some of the most important findings of that paper?
Yeah, so in our recent pilot study, it was published in Headache, we set out to better understand how cognition is affected across different phases of the migraine cycle. And this is not just in a lab setting, it's in real life. We use what we call ecological momentary assessment, or EMA, where participants use their smartphones to complete these brief cognitive tasks several times a day over the course of a few weeks. The idea is that this approach captures real-time changes. So for example, how someone's cognition might change during a migraine attack versus a headache-free phase. And what we found is that cognitive performance was indeed worse during that ictal phase, right? During that actual head pain phase. And, you know, this is important compared to the interictal periods when they don't have headaches. And this is important because traditional neuropsychological testing may not pick up on those kinds of fluctuations, and it might even underestimate the burden of migraine can place on someone's cognitive functioning in daily life. So this EMA approach really may offer a more accurate way to assess and eventually treat these symptoms.
And how was that sort of assessment taking place? Was that like a self-report using the phone app?
Yeah, so it was on their phone app. We asked them some self-report questions, but there were specific cognitive tasks. They had to, for example, one task, connect different letters and numbers as quickly as they can. Another was more of a working memory task where they had to hold a certain amount of information in their head and then shortly after be able to recall that information. So there were specific brief cognitive tasks, each lasting a few minutes.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense though, right? To someone who has migraine, it's like, well, yeah, it's clear that when you have that acute attack, you're not going to be performing at your best or as well as when you are not in the throes of an acute attack. But by the same token, you may not be 100%. You may not feel like you were 5-10 years ago before you had sort of migraine.
I think something important to mention about that is, you know, when we look at cognitive functioning, there's different ways to look at it. When we have a standard assessment, like more of a standardized assessment, that's typically in one or two sessions over several hours, we compare their performance to other people of similar age and background. You know, a lot of these tests are normed on large groups of people, so we can compare an individual's performance to what's typical for their age, education, and background. But that's only part of the picture. Just as important as comparing someone to themselves, right? So a person might score in the average range, but if they've always been a very high functioning kind of person, they've always been good at juggling tasks or learning new things quickly, even a subtle drop can feel so significant. Just to give an analogy, if someone who runs 6 miles a day can now only run 3, I mean, that's still very impressive, but for them, that's a real clear change. And so that's why when we're doing these cognitive evaluations, we're not just looking at the numbers, we're listening to the person's story and understanding their baseline and evaluating whether the changes they're reporting are affecting their real life functioning. Sometimes the results don't meet that criteria for that clinical impairment, but the changes are still meaningful. And as clinicians, we need to take those seriously.
Yeah, they matter to us as the patient. When you notice that you're at 30% capacity, even if that below 30%, you know, that 70% for you is still above or at average, it's meaningful for you. Are these findings consistent with other sort of studies that have been done? And do they match up with anything like any brain imaging studies that look at what's happening in the brain during these cognitive difficulties?
Yeah, so what is very consistent is that we're seeing cognitive difficulties during that ictal phase, during the head pain phase in a lot of studies. There's a lot of consistent research showing that. The fact that we saw worse cognition during that head pain phase versus in between attacks is consistent with the research because it's a little bit mixed with regards to the interictal phase when they're not experiencing that head pain.
If we had like an MRI of the migraine brain during an attack, would you expect that, like in those scans where you can see like the level of activity, would you expect that the level of activity would fall in certain regions of the brain?
Yeah, well, research does suggest that cognitive symptoms in migraine may be linked to disruptions in brain network connectivity and efficiency. So there is some research to suggest that, some imaging studies show some abnormal activation and communication between brain regions that are involved in both pain and cognition.
So we've had a lot of people ask this next question, in particular Lynn and Diane, and they'd like to understand if there is evidence that people with frequent or long-term migraine are at higher risk of dementia or accelerated brain aging.
You know, there have been several large long-term studies called, cohort studies, where people with migraine were followed for years. And their cognitive function was tested regularly using standardized neuropsychological assessments. Across these studies, and I'm talking about research that spans 3 to 12 years, there's really been no strong evidence that migraine increases the risk of dementia or significant cognitive decline, regardless of migraine type, whether it's with aura, without aura, episodic, chronic. Now, here's where it gets a little bit confusing. There are some meta-analyses, which are studies that combine data from lots of other studies. And those have suggested a slightly increased risk of dementia in people with migraine. So, the question is, what's going on? I think the key thing to understand here is that these two types of studies use very different methods. You have these longitudinal cohort studies that track people closely over time and use real cognitive testing so they can detect those subtle changes in cognition. The other kind of studies, they often pull from health records or a database. They might look at whether someone has a dementia diagnosis in their medical file, but they don't necessarily test cognition directly. It's kind of more like taking a snapshot, covers more people. That said, it can miss details or include misclassifications and can really be vulnerable to other issues like diagnostic errors or missing data. Other confounding factors, like other health conditions that weren't accounted for. They look at the diagnosed dementia and may pick up on later stage disease, whereas those cohort studies may be better at detecting early cognitive changes.
Karen and Jeanne are concerned about the medications they're taking and the impact on cognitive function. I can speak to this. I was on a preventive treatment for 7 years, and when I stopped it, it was like coming out of a fog. It was like a fog had lifted. Can medications we're taking affect our cognitive function over the short term? And what about the long term?
Yeah, when it comes to how migraine medications affect cognitive functioning, the picture is still a little bit mixed and not fully clear. There are some medications like topiramate, which is preventive treatment. It's known to cause side effects such as slow thinking, trouble concentrating, people report memory problems, especially at higher doses. There's another, lasmiditan, a cute treatment. It's been shown to affect things like driving performance shortly after taking it. That said, the research overall is still pretty limited, especially when it comes to long-term effects on cognition, specifically in people with migraine. Cognition is not always measured as a formal endpoint in many of these trials. That means we often don't get detailed information on how a medication might affect their thinking, how it affects their memory or attention, especially over the long term. Some studies include cognitive measures, but they vary a lot in what tests they use, how often they test, how big the study is, which can make it so hard to compare results or draw clear conclusions. Also, something to think about is that, many trials exclude people with pre-existing cognitive issues, which may leave out those who might be more sensitive to side effects. So in general, it's really important to balance migraine control with side effects. And if you are noticing that brain fog, you're having trouble thinking after starting a medication, bring it up. There may be other options or ways to adjust the dose. But overall, understanding the cognitive effects of migraine treatments is still an area where more focused research is definitely needed.
So moving now to kind of daily functioning and quality of life, what kind of day-to-day consequences can cognitive symptoms have on work performance and academic tasks or even family life?
Yeah, this can really be so different from person to person, right? So everyone's lives are different. Everyone has their own social life, their work life, family, everything is so different. Someone can have a few children and a few dogs and, they're not able to get anything done while they have a headache and they're not able to manage basic household activities. They're in bed all day. They're not able to get any work done. Maybe they're working from home, but they still can't really work from home. But it really depends on what their lifestyle is like in terms of how these cognitive symptoms affect them.
Yeah.
And when you mention headache, you're sort of talking about an acute sort of migraine attack.
Yes.
And how that can be sort of, you know, really debilitating and limit our abilities. Do we tend to underestimate or overestimate the cognitive effects? And how do we separate like what our perception is versus sort of this more measurable, more objective, you know, impairment that you test in your research?
It's tricky when we use the word overestimate and underestimate, and when we compare it to any of the objective data. I think we need to be careful as clinicians not to underestimate anything. If I have a patient who's reporting these word finding difficulties or that they get so distracted, they keep forgetting things, and if I tell them, I don't notice anything, right? There's nothing that I notice. I don't know what their lived experience is like. Right. And even if we have the data that shows something different than what they're reporting, doesn't mean that's not what's happening. Right. We need to be so careful on how we compare the data, compare their subjective complaints to the objective data that we have on our exams.
How does frequent migraine compare with other chronic conditions in terms of its cognitive burden?
I don't think we have enough comparative research to say exactly, you know, which condition carries the greatest or the least cognitive burden. You know, but before we even get there, I think it's important to talk about, you know, what we actually mean by that cognitive burden. It's not just about what shows up on a neuropsychological exam. It's about how those symptoms affect a person's daily life, their work, their relationships, their confidence, their sense of self. So cognitive burden isn't just about the symptoms themselves. It's also about the context in which they happen. And that brings us back to the challenge of comparing migraine to other chronic conditions. You know, many studies use different cognitive tests, different timeframes, different definitions, which can make it so hard to draw direct side-by-side comparisons. You know, a migraine study might involve younger, otherwise healthy adults, while a dementia or multiple sclerosis or epilepsy study might involve older adults with additional health conditions. So we're not comparing apples to apples. And even more importantly, many studies don't measure how cognitive symptoms actually affect their daily life, like someone's ability to parent or keep a job or just feel like themselves.
Let's shift now to prevention and management. If someone improves their migraine control with preventative therapy, do cognitive symptoms usually improve as well?
It can improve. You know, for some patients, they will find that improvement, right? They're not having as many headache attacks. But like I mentioned before, for other patients, it really may not improve, regardless of what strategies that they're using. And that's where it gets really complicated, because we have to find those specific strategies that work for that person. What works for one person may not work for another person. And really tailoring a plan that works best for you and something that the patient needs to work with the clinician on to figure out what's going to be the most appropriate plan.
So does that mean you might need to stratify your management plan into controlling the migraine, but also addressing these cognitive symptoms separately?
Yeah, I think we need to think about them separately, but also together as well, right? We're looking at the overall picture. We want to see if there is any sort of connection. You know, what happens if a patient has these cognitive symptoms and they're just getting worse over time and their headache attacks are getting better? Right. That's where we need to figure out what exactly is going on. Are there any other factors that's contributing? Are there any other conditions that we don't yet know about? And that's why they're having these cognitive symptoms. Oftentimes people think, okay, migraine, cognition. Yeah, I hear there's a link. It's probably due to the migraine. It may not be due to the migraine. Right. Just because they have that, that's what they lived with their entire lives. There may be other factors going on that we may not know about yet. And so we need to pay very close attention to those specific symptoms, how they started, and if they're progressing, if they're changing in any way, the types of cognitive symptoms. Maybe they used to have just attention difficulty, and now all of a sudden it's really starting to affect their planning, their decision-making, really starting to affect their memory retention. That's where we start to get a little bit concerned if maybe there's something else that's going on.
Cognitive symptoms and migraine both tie back to brain health. Are there lifestyle habits that protect brain health in people with migraine?
Yeah, that's a very important question. I think one that can be very empowering. I think we still need more targeted research specifically in migraine. There is a lot that we can draw from both migraine studies and broader brain health research. We know that habits like regular exercise, quality sleep, and stress reduction can be highly beneficial. Other important factors include cognitive stimulation, engaging in novel activities like, any novel activities that challenge the brain, such as reading new books or learning a new skill. Social interaction also plays a key role by improving mood and reducing stress, both of which can affect cognition. Staying socially active also helps keep the mind engaged and sharp. That said, it's important to acknowledge that this advice is easier said than done. And it's not just about knowing which lifestyle habits help. It's also about how people can realistically adopt and maintain these changes. You know, many people with migraine have lived with disrupted sleep patterns or fatigue for years. Hearing you need more sleep or try to be more active can feel so overwhelming or frustrating, especially if they don't get guidance on how to make those changes sustainably. So, for example, someone who's been getting only 3 to 4 hours of sleep per night won't suddenly jump to 7 to 8 hours overnight. That's not going to happen. But even those small improvements, like going from 3 to 5 hours, can be a meaningful step forward. Similarly, for those with very sedentary lifestyles, you know, just taking a short walk can be a huge achievement compared to months of inactivity. You know, these, what people call them baby steps, really do matter and can build that momentum over time. And that's why it's so important to approach lifestyle changes with patience and flexibility.
Yeah, it's aim for progress, not perfection. And like, none of us can do all of this all the time, but it's kind of finding like where those pockets are. Like maybe cognitive engagement is out of the question, but maybe you could manage a walk around the block. And then that walk around the block, after you've done that a couple of times, maybe that clears the head a little bit. Maybe that helps in other aspects. And then that opens up another opportunity to do something. And then that opens up another. And you create this sort of virtuous cycle that allows you to kind of do more and more over time and gradually, rather than trying to do everything all at once, which is kind of overwhelming.
Exactly. Yes.
Are there any interventions like cognitive rehabilitation or training that have been tested in migraine populations?
You know, first, when we talk about cognitive rehabilitation, we're referring to a set of therapeutic approaches designed to improve or compensate for cognitive difficulties. And these can include structured cognitive exercises to retrain skills like attention or executive functioning or memory, as well as compensatory strategies to support that daily functioning. So, for example, teaching someone how to use reminders more effectively or how to structure their environment to reduce cognitive overload. Cognitive rehabilitation is commonly used in certain populations like traumatic brain injury and stroke, where cognitive impairment can be so widely recognized. When it comes to migraine, though, this is a relatively unexplored area. You know, today there's very limited research on cognitive rehabilitation, specifically in migraine.
What myths or misconceptions do you hear most about migraine and brain health?
There's definitely people that say, oh, because there's so much inconsistent research, there's really not much going on. I really do hear this from neuropsychologists, hear this from people who don't really know much about migraine. We already have the evidence that there's something going on. The patients are reporting it. That's important. Regardless of what the research shows, this is what the patients are experiencing. So I would say in the field of neuropsychology, neuropsychologists, I think, should take a very close look at the literature. I will say, if you open a neuropsychology textbook, many of them won't even have the word headache in there, won't have the word migraine.
For patients who worry about dementia, what is the most important message you'd like to leave with them?
most patients that I see for evaluations, they're concerned about dementia, right? They have a cognitive issue, they have cognitive symptoms, and they say, is this dementia? Am I getting Alzheimer's? And what I've heard supervisors say is, and now what I say is, we all don't know who's going to get dementia, right? That's the truth. I don't know what's going to happen to me in a number of years. Like, who knows what's going to happen? We don't know who's going to get what condition. But what is most important is that there's so much we can do to improve our brain health, right? There's so many lifestyle factors, so many things that we can do for ourselves and take care of ourselves. It's a big concern. A lot of people are concerned about it. But you can have cognitive symptoms and not have dementia. You can have cognitive symptoms. It's not going to necessarily lead to Alzheimer's disease. People get so concerned about that.
Well, we greatly appreciate you joining us today in the Migraine World Summit. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.